There are pieces of our liturgy that are so familiar to us. Many of us can probably recite much of them by heart. Avinu Malkeinu, which we just sang, is one of them. Kol Nidre, at least in part, probably. Maybe V'ahavta or Aleinu, Avot V'Imahot and Givurot. It does help if they have a memorable melody to go along with the words. And maybe we wouldn't get them 100% perfect just by memory, but we're pretty familiar with them. I found the same is true with texts from the non-Jewish part of our lives. I pledge allegiance to the flag. 47 years ago. Space, the final frontier. How about this one? If the cabin should experience a sudden loss of pressure, oxygen masks will be released overhead to start the flow of oxygen. Reach up and pull the mask towards you. Place the mask over your nose and mouth and slip the elastic band over your head. Be sure to secure your own mask before assisting others. Okay, maybe we couldn't say that one exactly by heart, but I think most of us know what to do in that situation. And I also think many of us probably have considered the teaching of that final instructor. Be sure to secure your own mask before assisting others. Now, for parents or for people tasked with safeguarding others, that's a little counterinstinctual. Our natural impulse may be to help others first, but the airlines know what they are talking about. If we fail to affix our own masks and faint from lack of oxygen, we cannot be of help to anyone else. Sometimes, you have to take care of yourself first. You don't stop there. Once you put on your own mask, you should assist others. But primacy rests with you first and then other people. Now, centuries before the first airplanes and safety instructions, over 2,000 years ago, our great sage Hillel the Elder taught this same lesson. Our tradition teaches he used to say, "Im ein ani li mi li," if I am not for myself, who will be for me? Uksha'ani la'atzmi ma'ani. When I am for myself alone, when I'm only for myself, what am I? V'im lo akshav ematai. And if not now, then when? Hillel never flew on a plane, of course. But he wouldn't have needed that pre-flight announcement. If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? When I'm only for myself, what am I? Hillel would have put his own mask on first and then helped those around him. Now, there's a tension we may feel when we talk about this. We want to be helpful and take care of others. We don't want to seem, selfish or self-centered. But ultimately, we have to take care of ourselves first. I once heard a teaching that speaks to this on the verse from Leviticus, "Ve'ahavta l'reicha kamocha," love your fellow as yourself. The straightforward reading of the text speaks to how we treat others, showing them the kindness and respect and dignity and honor that we would want for ourselves. But there's an additional way to read this text. If we are to love others as we love ourselves, we have to know how we love ourselves first. If we don't take care of ourselves first, we will not know how to take care of others. Loving others as we love ourselves requires us to know and understand and love ourselves. Be sure to secure your own mask before assisting others. Now, this notion of taking care of ourselves first has felt particularly present this year. With everything going on in the world, with Israel being tested physically and existentially, as we talked about last week, with anti-Semitism rising, threatening our sense of safety, with all of these challenges, all of this very hard year for the Jewish community, there is a sense of im ein ani li mi li. If we as a Jewish community don't stand up for ourselves, who will? And at the same time, we feel the pull of Hillel's second statement, uksha'ani la'atzmi ma'ani. If all that I do is look out for myself, what good is that? At this moment, in our world as it is today, how do we balance between these two competing orientations? Now, this tension has been wrestled with in various forms and formats within the Jewish community since the time of the Enlightenment. It has been addressed in different ways by different segments of the Jewish community at different time periods with differing results. Social scientists would certainly say that American Judaism has been undergoing some pretty dramatic changes in the past 25 years in affiliation patterns, demographic shifts, generational differences, and a shift away from learning and ritual and a focus more on social action. As some of the results of these changes, some in our community worry that we are losing our sense of identity. They worry that we are too focused on taking care of others, that we aren't taking care enough of ourselves. They worry that we are losing the sense of what we stand for, making it harder to stand up for ourselves. They worry that we are losing our Jewish why. I understand these concerns, but I don't think this is quite the severe drop in cabin pressure level of crisis in the community. But I do think it is worth addressing this worry as we conclude this difficult year and head into the next. Now, one way of framing this concern has to do with ideas about particularism and universalism. Particularism is a viewpoint that emphasizes the primacy of specific Jewish teachings and rituals and customs and morals as a basis for an outlook on life. It posits that the focus of Jews should be on those core elements within the community, expressing Judaism through Jewish values in Jewish living. Universalism, on the other hand, looks to the broader swath of humanity, positing universal norms and standards. The focus is on universal values lived universally across all cultures and people and religion. Particularism is doing things, well, in a particularly Jewish way. Universalism asserts the primacy of the universal experience. Since the onset of modernity, Judaism has been wrestling with the balance between these two orientations. Universalism says we should be focused on the broader world, seeking to adhere to its values and further its goals and bring about universal goodness. But if so, one can ask, what purpose is there then in being particularly Jewish? If you can be a good person and uphold good values and act with goodwill in the world all without being Jewish, and you surely can, then why be Jewish? And on the other hand, particularism says that there's a value in specifically Jewish rituals and practices and beliefs and morals, and that living particularist Jewish life is meaningful. What then of our interaction with the rest of society? Do we just ignore the rest of the world or pay attention only to the Jewish community and follow only the Jewish way of doing things, as if there was only one Jewish way of doing things? Yeah. Does particularism have to be so monofocused? Scholars recognize both universalism and particularism are deeply embedded in Jewish tradition. Rabbi David Ellenson pointed out that the opening chapters of the book of Genesis contain both a covenant between God and Noah and a covenant between God and Abraham. The Noahide laws apply to all of humanity. The covenant with Abraham, reaffirmed with Moses at Mount Sinai, is the particular covenant between God and the Jewish people. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks noted that the Torah begins with Adam and Eve and 10 generations of non-Jews before telling the story of Abraham. He reminds us that the Torah is a particular text, but it begins with the universal of the human condition. Judaism is built on a dual structure, Rabbi Sacks teaches. It has a universal dimension and a particular one, neither one of which negates the other. As one Jewish think tank explains, in Judaism, there is a constant interplay between the particular and the universal, as our tradition seeks to maintain a distinct Jewish identity on the one hand, and simultaneously embrace an ethical imperative to contribute to broader humanity on the other. Now, for the founders of Reform Judaism back in Germany in the 1800s, the pendulum definitely swung towards the universal. There was a willingness to dispense with some of Judaism's particular laws and customs dealing with ritual practice and focus instead on the ethical mandates of Judaism's moral teachings. The worship service, the prayer books, the theology, the methodology of study, even the physical arrangements of synagogues all underwent reforms. There was a growing focus on achieving universal harmony. Judaism could shed its particularist past and focus on a universalist future. Here in America, the first platform of American Reform Judaism in 1885 proclaimed, We accept as binding only the moral laws and maintain only such ceremonies as elevate and sanctify our lives, but reject all such as are not adapted to the views and habits of modern civilization. We acknowledge that the spirit of broad humanity of our age is our ally in fulfillment of our mission. Now, this focus on universalism dominated Reformed Judaism for decades. But whether as a reaction to the rise of Zionism, or a renewed sense of peoplehood after the horrors of the Holocaust, or the Jewish pride sparked by the creation of the State of Israel in 48, or the victory of Israel in the Six-Day War in 67, the rise in ethnocentric identity, or any other factors, particularism eventually began to reassert itself in Reform Judaism. By the 1970s, Dr. Eugene Borowitz had become the leading theologian of the Reform movement, and he couched his philosophy of Judaism as covenantal theology. He posited that the autonomous Jewish self was bound in a collective covenant with God and with generations past, present, and future. His thinking marked an era in which Reform Judaism reclaimed particularist traditions and reinfused some of them with new meaning for the contemporary era. Talit and kippah reappeared as marks of ritual practice and identity. Immersion in the mikveh was no longer a ritual chore, but a potential ceremony of renewal. Keeping kosher could be expanded beyond separating milk and meat to include ethical treatment of animals and farm workers. Nevertheless, there are those who feel the balance between particularism and universalism remains weighted towards universalism in today's Reformed Jewish world. They think most Reformed Jews orient towards universal values more than particular practices. Fewer families are regularly making conscious Jewish choices in their lives. Fewer non-Orthodox Jews are knowledgeable about Jewish texts and rituals. Fewer make the intentional practice of Judaism or connection with Jewish community a year-round priority in their lives. So this brings us back to the worries framed by Hillel's questions. If our focus lies too much outside the Jewish world, if we are too focused on the universal and not enough on the particular, are we losing our sense of Jewish why? Are we able to stand up for ourselves first and then take care of others if we don't know what we are standing for? The allure of universalism in modern life is strong, and the dispensability of particularist practice is easy. But my challenge for us tonight, for this year ahead, is to re-embrace particularism, not at the expense of universalism or denying the importance of the universalist impulse in Judaism, but rather to make particularism more central to our primary mode of Jewish identity. To do this, we will need to ask ourselves that question: why be Jewish? Why identify as part of the Jewish community? Certainly in today's world, it can be so much easier not to be Jewish. And a person certainly can be a good person, a good citizen of the world without being Jewish. So why be Jewish? Why embrace this particularist identity? Now, some of us, I suspect, will first answer with Tevye's answer, which is tradition. Many of us live as Jews because that's the way our ancestors lived. We have Jewish family dating back generations. They were Jewish, so we're Jewish. We've inherited their heirlooms and their practices and their traditions, at least somewhat. I doubt really that any of us actually practice with truly live Judaism the exact way our Jewish ancestors did. And we know there are many in our community whose Jewish roots do not go back hundreds of years, but maybe only a generation or two. Or you may be your own Jewish ancestor, the first of your generation to choose to embrace Judaism. Family and tradition are among the reasons to be Jewish, but they're not the only ones. Related to family, for some, is the idea of Jewish guilt. How could we abandon what our ancestors adhered to after all they went through? The stories of generational hardship, surviving persecution, immigration to America or Eretz Yisrael, ultimately even the Holocaust, these all provide some of us with enough guilt to keep us Jewish. There's a sense of obligation that this is what I'm supposed to do, for the sake of those who came before me. But friends, while history and tradition, guilt and obligation may be entry points for why people are Jewish, I do not think they are enough to sustain us. My mentor, Leonard Fine, used to teach, "Please come survive with us," is not a very catchy recruitment slogan. There are reasons for living a particularist and engaged Jewish life that go beyond the influences of our personal and our communal past. So I ask again, what is your reason for being Jewish? Reformed Judaism is predicated on the idea of choice through knowledge. So we need to know why we are choosing to be Jewish when we could so easily choose not to. I'll share with you my reasons, and maybe they'll spark you to find yours. For me, Judaism provides a framework for living in time. There's a Jewish rhythm to the days and weeks and months and years of my life. Each morning, I thank God that I'm alive as I hum the Mode Ani prayer to myself as I go through my morning routine. And each night, I reflect with gratitude on something that occurred that day. Each week, I anticipate the arrival of Shabbat, a break from the regular days of the week, and a chance to celebrate with family and community. Now, some Shabbats are more restful than others, which would be true even if I wasn't a rabbi. But there's always something that is different from the norm to make Shabbat, Shabbat. Spread throughout the calendar months are holidays and festivals, biblically commanded or more modern invention. Passover punctuates the spring, Shavuot the summer, Sukkot the fall, Hanukkah the winter, and then round again. The seasons of life have Jewish markings too. The namings and brises of my nieces and nephews, the b'nai mitzvah of my children, the weddings of my cousins, the burial of my father. Judaism is the time signature in the symphony of life, and it keeps me on beat through joy and celebration, through sorrow and consolation. Judaism also provides me a framework for living with values. Kibud av va'em, honor your parents, means I call my mom just about every day. Lo telech rachil, do not be a talebearer, means I strive to avoid gossip and talking about others unjustly. I know that the grocery clerk who is moving so slowly or the waiter who gets my order so wrong is also created B'Tselem Elohim in God's image. So I try and be patient and understanding, although I'll admit that's harder with other drivers on the road sometimes, but I do try. Lo telech pe'at sarcha, do not reap to the corners of your field, means I bring in food for our food drives. Kidoshim tihiyu, you shall be holy, means I strive to ensure that my actions and my words bring holiness into the world, or at least don't diminish it. These are universal values, to be sure, but they frame my life because of the particular way that Judaism has taught me to live. Judaism provides me with a life of meaning and purpose. The covenant between God and Abraham requires us to be a blessing. We are called to be a realm of priests, a holy nation, a light of the nations. The second paragraph of the Aleinu, which we don't often read in Reform congregations, calls us Litaken Olam B'Malchut Shaddai, to repair or restore the world under the rule of God. And yes, this is one of the origins of the phrase Tikkun Olam. But here it doesn't just mean fixing the world. It calls us to work to arrange society in the way that God intended it, the way God wants it to be, with justice and compassion. And that makes me a partner with God in completing the work of creation. And this gives me a goal, a mission, a purpose as to why we are here on this earth. Again, these are universalist values, but I am called to them through a particularist lens. A rich, robust, deep, thick Judaism offers all of this as a framework for our lives, and it also requires effort. There are holidays to observe and celebrate. There are services to attend and engage in. There are rituals to perform, learning to be done, ethics and morals to be enacted in the world. We call these mitzvot, commandments. But unlike some of our Reform forebears, we take on both the ethical and the ritual mitzvot that we find meaning in. This isn't always easy. Sometimes it requires making choices between Jewish obligations and secular pursuits. Sometimes it is harder to live Jewishly than otherwise. But, for example, I like keeping Passover's week-long dietary restrictions because it reminds me that I am different, that I have a different framework for my life, that the choices that week that I make reflect the history and tradition that I am heir to and the values of freedom and redemption that I want to see enacted in the world. Judaism calls me to a mission and purpose in the world, and I respond through particularist acts and ethics that also resonate with universalist values. There are particularist ways to do so many of the universalist things we already do. We can engage in acts that help our world through Jewish organizations like Mazon, a Jewish response to hunger, or Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action, and Hayas, which formerly was the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society and now is a leading global agency helping refugees worldwide. We take part in multicultural community events like our joint Thanksgiving service with Abiding Presence, and we bring particularly Jewish traditions and customs into broader society. We recognize the sanctity of all human beings and praise God for the blessing of the lives of all who have lived when we add the Al Kol Yoshvei Tevel, all the inhabitants of the earth, to our Kaddish prayer. We can respond to the call of universal values, and we can do it through particularist Jewish practices. The state of the world that we are in asks us Hillel's third question, V'im lo akshav ematai, if not now, then when? This is the time to reassert and strengthen our Jewish identity in this way. We must find or reclaim the meaning that we make in our lives through Jewish activities and rituals, study and practice, and being in community. Our own rabbi, Emerita Amy Perlin, wrote, "Let us proclaim that our particularist Judaism is the lens through which we live in the world and through which we approach universal objectives." In this year ahead, in our multicultural, multi-identity, multi-everything world, let us each find our Jewish why that brings meaning to our lives. Kein yihi ratzon, may this be God's will. And together we say,